Good afternoon. I'm Rhonda Fineman, and this is the Healthy Options program right here on WERU Community Radio. Our guest today on Healthy Options is Donna Brooks. Donna Brooks has studied with several of the pioneers and practitioners of somatic movement and of Iyengar yoga, and has several decades worth of experience as a certified yoga therapist and master somatic movement therapist and educator. She's also studied the geometry and physics of movement. I love that. Okay. And the nervous system connections of the sympathetic and parasympathetic responses to stress and trauma and grief and loss. Donna has designed a variety of programs for relieving stress in the nervous system and ways to help transform limiting movement patterns and to heal body-mind disconnection. So what does this all mean? Well, we've invited Donna Brooks here today to explore these connections of mind, body, and movement with us and to share some techniques that can help us reduce stress, process trauma, and also to learn how gentle movement can assist in healing from grief and loss. Welcome to Healthy Options, Donna Brooks. We are so glad you could be with us today.
Thank you, Rhonda. It's wonderful to be here.
So how would you describe the work you do? Let's just start right there.
Well, I would say that the major difference between somatic movement and other physical disciplines is that we're feeling ourselves from the inside out. So in our society, we tend to experience ourselves as intellect, as head, as concepts of who we are. And we walk around looking at the body as if it's just a vehicle to carry our head around. And sometimes the head, we shift out of the head and, you know, we feel emotions, not that all of them are pleasant. So that can bring us back in the head. And then when we try to do something for our bodies or even our body minds, we put the body through paces. And somatic movement is different because we're attempting to experience ourselves as embodied, that the body becomes something that we are, that we experience, versus something that we look at from the point of view of our intellect or even our awareness. Because often we're aware through our head, and there's still a separation between us and our bodies.
So is that what would you do in a, what is somatic movement, for instance?
Well, somatic means that you're sensing yourself from the inside out. There are many different flavors to how practitioners practice somatic movement. But I would say that what is a common denominator of all of them is that we're trying to drop thinking about our body and instead actually participating with the experience of living in our body. So a difference of that might be as simple as, okay, if I, you know, this is very basic, but let's do it. If I lift my hand up, I can be aware of my hand because I can, you know, see the lines on it. I might feel the temperature of it. There might be certain sensations in my hand that are familiar or unfamiliar. But then if I really almost imagine I have a glove on and my hand is in the inside of that glove and I'm experiencing the internalness of the hand, does that feel different to you than observing the hand?
So is everybody doing this at home?
Yeah, this is one. I'll give you another. I mean, these are very, very foundational practices of somatics.
Actually, what do we say? Simple is best, right?
Simple is best, yeah. So I can watch my hand and witness my hand and even experience sensation in my hand, but it's coming from my watching, which isn't bad. It's just where we tend to be stuck. Or I could enter into my hand. The meditation teacher Les Femi practiced a kind of somatic meditation, and he would talk about internal distance. So can I feel the internal distance from my wrist to my thumb? Not picturing that distance, not measuring that distance, but actually as if you're in the car going somewhere, you're experiencing distance.
I'm going from my wrist to my thumb. I'm driving,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And you can also Even just putting your hand on your chest, and as soon as you put your hand on your chest, our hands have a lot more nerve endings than most other places in our body. So it's very easy to feel the fabric of your clothing. Maybe you feel under the fabric, you feel a little softness of your muscle or fat. You might feel the hardness of your bones. And maybe you feel the beating of your heart or even some sense of warmth in your chest. Now, can your chest experience your hand?
Ah.
And how is that if the chest experiences your hand? Does that take you from more of the observation into the embodied experience?
So let's all do that. If you haven't already, our hand, chest experiencing your hand.
Yeah, and even particularly if that already feels resonant with you, can you experience your heart receiving your own hand?
Did that change your breath? I wonder.
Mm-hmm. It often changes people's breath.
Is there a sense of being more in the room or in your, if you're in your car, please keep your hands on the wheel, but that sense of feeling something through your feet, even so this can be empowered and embodied, as we are saying, through all these different layers.
I think at its, absolutely, you can experience life. You can experience your hand through your bone. So obviously your hand can feel your bone, but can your bone feel your hand? So that is more of a quality from the inside out rather than the outside in. And it's not wrong to feel from the outside in. It's just over dominant in our culture. And when we start feeling from the inside out, we have change because it brings a certain type of presence to our experience. And in that presence, sometimes difficulties just sort of shed. And other times that presence can be built upon with very particular approaches to movement that can relieve pain, that can help with stress and trauma, that can help regulate breathing so it's more useful.
Let's talk about that for a moment, because for some people this would be very overstimulating, and for others it could be very relaxing and soothing. So how would we work with that?
So my experience is that when people feel overstimulated as they come into a somatic experience, it's because the body has a reaction of some type going on. The body is primed to find difficulty and unpleasantness in the body. And that's a survival pattern, right? Because if you know you're going to be facing a lot of struggle and strain and pain, it's better to be prepared for it so you can deal with it, until that becomes your default and you become unable to find anything in your body that isn't painful or stressful or discomforting. So if someone comes into my office, my studio, and they are more, as you put it, overstimulated, the first thing we have to do is find places of safety. So for instance, sitting versus lying down, checking out their layers of clothing, being interactive with me, is my voice irritating? Do I need to speak more softly? And then once there's a certain level of, okay, it's all right to be here, there are two things that I find are essential to make people safe with having an internal experience, being open to it, being neutral or even pleasant. One is to be able to find themselves in their own skin in a neutral way. and the other is gravity, with a lot of anxiety and fear. There's a upward pulling away from the earth. And again, this might have to be done very gradually, but becoming bonded to gravity, that's also something that in our culture, many of us didn't have adequate time with or nurturance with as we were infants, when it really should have been established. So generally, as a culture, we're not all that comfortable with gravity. We're either rushing around or we're exhausted and we just collapse. And being in gravity in a proper way actually brings a very nice tone to the body and the nervous system, where you're not either or, you're not revved up or collapsed. You're just in this nice elasticity where you can extend yourself healthily when you need to, when you can rest without collapse. So gravity is extremely important for our general well-being, but also for establishing the safety that allows your heart to feel your hand on your chest.
Is that some people would call grounding? Is that feeling connected to the earth, or is that different?
I'm familiar with grounding in different contexts. Certainly that type of grounding where people feel the energy of the earth is very, very important. And I think that that is inherent in connecting with gravity. I think that when I talk about gravity, there's a couple of things. One is the difference between kind of melting or sinking versus actually understanding your body doesn't melt. It doesn't go anywhere when you ground. You're contained and held. And in that containment and held, what is your relationship to gravity or to the earth? And the other piece that's related to that is some people with grounding, and again, it's very individual, but I notice some instruction is to kind of place yourself, like intend yourself to be grounded. And that is also different to the openness of a natural feature of being on Earth that you can connect with.
So it's not something we have to try to do.
Exactly. Exactly.
So the sense of trying and doing, which is so embedded in our culture, and not every culture, but in our culture, if you happen to be in the Western world, and listening to this program, that is something that can take us away from our natural connections, would you say?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
How would you approach, you said when someone comes in that you're working with safety, are you, in terms of somatic movement, are you looking at how people are moving? What's a natural pattern? What happens if
we were coming? This is an interesting thing, Rhonda, because some people come in and they know that they're not in their bodies and they want to get in their bodies. And sometimes there's a lot of terror with that. And for that particular client, building the safety and having them gradually just experience their internal selves with a more open possibility is very useful. Then I have other people come in. I know something's wrong with my walking. My lower back hurts all the time. My shoulders hurt all the time. My neck hurts. I have pelvic floor issues. And then, yes, there are ways of unwinding or unlocking patterns of movement that have been harmful. And when you unlock those patterns of harm and discomfort, then the naturalness, the organicness of our healthy movement asserts itself. And that is very based in developmental movement patterns that, again, we're supposed to go through the first year of life. Some of us go through them better. Some of us go through them worse. And some of us just go through them, and then we have other things that happen in our life that distort the well-being of our movement.
So that could be an accident, physical. It could be emotional. It could be trauma. It could be abuse.
Yes.
All of these things that can affect our movement.
Yes.
If you are just joining us and you are listening to Healthy Options on WERU Community Radio, I'm Rhonda Fineman, and our guest today is Donna Brooks. She has 40 years of experience teaching, counseling, and coaching as a somatic movement therapist, yoga therapist, and educator. So we're exploring that sense of movement. What I was struck by looking at the material you sent and a lot of the work of somatic movement therapy is the sense of natural movement, that much as you explain that there is so much that our body naturally can do, that our natural breath can happen, and yet all of our life is imposed on that. And yet there are techniques, there are the things that you're talking about that can help us regulate. So can you speak more about some of those,
Yeah, techniques? I think this goes back to the beginning, like as you're saying, all those things we put in, that's seeing our body as something that we need to manipulate in order to get it to comply with how we think it should be, as opposed to inviting the body to reclaim its innate well-being. And I would say the thing is that in somatic movement, because obviously now these days there's somatic psychotherapy, so I want to be clear, this is somatic movement, that we think of approaching the body versus giving it techniques. So what approach do we use that lets the body unwind and come to a more balanced place? And, you know, in my practice, I still sometimes do give techniques. Like it can be appropriate to give breathing techniques for certain things. Like a very simple thing is if we go back to the beginning where people have more fear and anxiety, if you lengthen your exhalations longer than your inhalations.
Wait, let's do that. Let's everybody do that. You know, even if you don't identify as a quote anxious person, there are ways that we are all anxious in this day and age, in this world, things happen. And even for some people, just going into a meeting can create anxiety. It's not necessarily a quote pathology, a diagnosis. So I think this is great. Let's take a moment.
Okay. Yeah,
and actually people can get set. How would you set that up? What are people who are listening at home? Again, not if you're driving, well, you can listen later, but take it in easily, but still pay attention to what you're doing.
Yeah. So what I would say is if you can sit comfortably, you can sit. If you don't feel like you want to sit, lie down on the floor. And the first thing I like to do with people generally, with any practice, if it doesn't cause overstimulation, is to just feel what your breath is doing now. So there are so many different layers of breathing. And usually where people start to feel their breath is their chest and maybe their abdomen. And right away, for most people, they'll say, like, I need to fix this. This isn't I'm not breathing deeply enough, or my belly's not moving. So drop all of that. Just actually first, the first thing is just this coming home in the body. And you might notice your breath in your chest, but what's your chest? There's a side and a back to your chest. You have breath in the side and back of your chest. You're just exploring. It's like you're being curious. You're a detective to your own body. And your belly might be moving, but, you know, belly breathing has its limitations, and it's possible you feel breath in your waist, your lower back, your hips. Just see what's there. You don't know. Your pelvic floor has potential for movement through your breath. Some people readily feel the champagne bubbly kind of breathing, even of their cells, is a possibility. Mm-hmm. Often We disregard the breath in our throat and our neck, although that's quite important to the movement of our vocal folds. And the same thing with the breath in our nostrils. There's different passageways in your nostrils and into the sinuses. So just feel where your breath is. And some of these places it might be absent. Some of these places it might be more difficult to feel like it's easy. And some places feel very easy. And then let's just take a moment, actually, to just move the rib cage around a little bit, because sometimes the breath gets stuck in the rib cage. So all I want you to do, if you're lying on the floor or you're sitting, is bring your hands above your heart again and just lift your elbows and just take your elbows as lifted as you can have them. If you're lying on the floor, your elbows are staying on the floor, and then let your wings unfold, right? So your arms or your wings, maybe you could feel through your fingertips, and maybe you could reach one wing just gently and relax it, and reach the other wing and relax it, and see if you could feel this pulling on your ribs a lot. So you're not so much shifting your weight, although there'll be a little weight shift, as just feeling a difference in your ribs. And just see if you can inhale in one direction, exhale in the other direction. So it's sensual, it's pleasant, it's a lovely experience. If you get tired, you're done. You can bring your hands back down to your chest and just feel your breath. And you can, if it doesn't cause pain, just sort of turn your head to one side and the other, really slowly, as if you can even close your eyes. So it's almost like there's an aroma you want to get your nose to, and you could feel that the breath is just coming into the nose. Like, you can't prevent the air from coming up into your nose. That word, waft. There's an aroma wafting into your nose, and that's why you're turning your head. You're turning it towards that scent and then changing your mind, and maybe there's another scent on the other side. And as you do this again, feel how the movement's not just in your neck and your throat. It's in your ribs. It might even be further. We're an entire connected whole. And then come back to center. And what you may already notice, and again, this is very brief, but you may already notice that your breath is slower. Your breath may be deeper. You may be feeling your breath in more places. Again, this is a very rudimentary approach to opening up your breath. And if you did notice that your inhalation was a little longer than your exhalation, see if that's evened out now. And if you feel any kind of jitteriness or anticipatory qualities, just take your hands a little lower, bring them down to the bottom of your ribs. And when you exhale, just make a nice long shh sound. And don't rush your inhalation. Your inhalation comes whenever it comes. It goes wherever it goes. And at the height of your inhalation, maybe you find a little pause, maybe you don't. And then you let out another shh, and the shh will help your exhalations be more complete. At the bottom of your exhalation, you might also find a little pause. Just don't force your inhalation. Let it enter. Be curious where it's moving in your body, and continue in this vein with this nice shh. And why I'm directing versus just being curious, although there's still the curiosity of what's changing in my breathing, but why I'm directing is because our nervous systems are usually hair trigger to go, meaning we're more sympathetic. Even if we're not in fight or flight outright, we're more sympathetically charged. And the exhalation is parasympathetic. So when you lengthen that exhalation, you take some of the edge off of that sympathetic and you just become more calm.
So we're breathing in. Well, I love that. Let's do it again.
Yeah, okay. So you're feeling the kind of bottom area of your ribs because you want to feel movement in there. That's the area of your diaphragm. And I guess at the end, I can direct people to my YouTube playlist and free stuff on my, yeah, okay, because there's more detailed instruction. But for now, you're just making that shh sound, like a little bit like you're trying to quiet someone in a library. Shh. And you'll feel a kind of contraction or constriction in your lungs, your belly. And you don't have to rush your inhale. So you don't have to hold your breath, but you don't have to go, okay, I exhaled, so now I better breathe in. You're curious. How does the inhalation arise and where does it arise? Do you feel it in the back of your nostrils? Do you feel it in your belly and your chest and your tail? I'm not saying you should feel it anywhere. It's just possible to feel it in many places. Trust yourself. And then there's a kind of suspension at the height of the inhalation, potentially like a wave that's cresting, and there's a moment before it comes down. So just see if that's there. You don't have to make anything happen, just being open to it. And then following that exhalation, shh.
The sense of the sound being part of this is so useful because the sound and the nervous system are so connected. When you're doing this, and people can still practice and listen at the same time,
Yeah, that's good.
if you are experiencing relaxation with this, we have a very informed audience. We've done a lot of work at Healthy Options about trauma and trauma resiliency and the parasympathetic and sympathetic nervous system, and all these different ways of coming back into the body to deal with trauma. Would you say that if from this experience, would it bring up in your practice, does it bring up different kinds of unpleasantness or re-stimulation of or memories, and how would you deal with that if for some people something unpleasant has come up?
Yeah, I mean, it can. Unpleasant can come up, and I will talk to people about it. And I have experience as a coach. If it's an intensely difficult thing, there are therapists that actually refer clients to me to help them develop the resilience that lets them delve into, sometimes very, very intense experiences. So I don't necessarily work solo with that. Yes, unpleasantness can come up, and there are ways of anchoring yourself in your felt experience so that you can simultaneously allow the difficulty or the unpleasantness of the experience to unrise without being fully consumed in it. And that is something with people who come specifically because of trauma. I'll spend a lot of time with that type of resource. Where can you live? And again, it's not conceptual. It's finding this place inside of yourself that's before the trauma.
Yeah. It's there's that sense that's happening from the inside out that's still resilient, even if
I
one has.
think if we look at it embryologically, or so in yoga, there's this concept of the Sushumna, this deep central channel where we're most ourselves, and yet we're also very transparent with the whole universe. And there's a corollary to that, I think, in embryology, in that we've had this notochord I think it's like 3 weeks the notochord starts to develop. And it's not a structure that's in us anymore, but it's a structure that very much defined our creation. And that creation, we unfolded. So that notochord, in a sense, held everything we were going to enfold into, but it was prior to that. And its resonance is still deeply within us. And finding this is such a resource because it's us underneath the trauma.
I love that concept. It's us underneath the trauma. For so many, the trauma becomes it. That
I
is,
know.
it all encompasses us, and grief and loss and all whatever level of trauma and whatever description is your trauma. But this idea that there is something before the trauma that still lives in us. Let's just
Yes.
take that in for a moment.
Yes. Yeah.
And if you're just joining us, you're listening to the Healthy Options program on WERU Community Radio. I'm Rhonda Fineman. Our guest today is Donna Brooks. She is an experiential movement, somatic movement therapist, a yoga teacher, and educator. We're exploring all these different ways of understanding the inside out, but we are also living in the world, so we have things that come into us. And we were talking when we were organizing, deciding to do this show, that we would talk a little bit about grief and loss, and that can mean many, many things. You know, some people in the political world right now are feeling grief and loss of certain safety. You can be the loss of a loved one, the loss of whatever. How would you talk about this?
Well, I like to say two things. One thing is, Rhonda, when this is really important, it's that the way our sensory motor nervous system works is that literally we receive information into the back of our spine. And that might sound like some kind of irrelevant detail, but think about this is like a little imaginal exercise for the listeners. Think about if like something is right in front of you that feels like a bear. Maybe it is actually a bear. And how immediately you get thrown into sort of that fight, flight, and freeze. And how that's different. To let's say you're, let's use a bear. Like you're, let's use this example. You're walking, everyone can relate to this. You're walking down the street and you're kind of, maybe you're talking on your phone, maybe you're texting, you know, maybe you're thinking about a lot of different things. And all of a sudden there's a dog in your path. And you don't know if the dog's friendly or not, but it's a big dog. So you're kind of like, what should I do? But if you're walking down the street and you're in more of what we might call an open focus or this place where we're receiving, you're literally, your nervous system is taking information into the back before you motor. And so you're feeling the air on your skin, you're noticing the trees, maybe you hear some barking, and then suddenly a dog appears. Isn't your reaction going to be really different from that place? So this is a somatic practice that's based in our physiology, is how are you receiving information? Because where you receive information from, if you're just receiving it like it's a confrontation, it's going to be harder to manage and deal with. So that is part of an ongoing underlying practice of everything that I do with my clients and students. And then in terms of grief and loss, oh, yeah, if you're already feeling like the world's coming at you and you're combating it really hard, it is going to be that much more difficult to go through any process of unexpected, especially grief and loss. I do think that we could think of it politically or with people who lose people. it does make a lot of sense to me that our bodies interpret loss as danger. So if we're already in the midst of danger and more danger comes, it's harder to cope. And so it's like, I feel so grateful for my somatic practice when my son died, because he died very unexpectedly, very suddenly, within an hour and a half of him going to the hospital. He was dead.
Oh my goodness.
And yeah, it was very intense. And
so sorry.
Thank you. And I could cope with that better because I had a lot of years of somatic practice under me. And my body still interpreted his death as fight, flight, and freeze. And I do think that that is part of a process we have to accept in loss.
So that means fright, flight, and freeze, that we're tense, our nervous system is stuck, and it could be stuck on high, where we're frantic, could be stuck on low.
Well, I think the thing about fight, flight, and freeze is it only becomes stuck or becomes a dysfunction when it becomes chronic. But like when Michael died, I totally went into collapse even. I literally, the floor came, wasn't there anymore, and I collapsed, which is a very extreme part of freeze. And I had all of the states of fight, flight, and freeze. But thankfully, my nervous system kept going through them. So it's like look at the classic kind of freeze is a cat catches a mouse and the mouse's body freezes in the hope that the cat won't eat it. It will just be bored and drop it. Or maybe it's preparing for death by freezing. That's a theory some people have about freeze too. So what that means is that it's a very valuable function, and it's not that the mouse is stuck. It's that the mouse needs that. Like I needed a certain amount of freeze to even be able to start to process this piece of information. Someone else might not go directly to freeze. They might go to more fight, like in an effort to protect themselves from, because it feels like your death, right? Like when someone dies or something very important, like, you know, for some of us, American institutions seemingly dying is a kind of death to us too, because we're identified with it. So how people handle that, maybe some people feel more the anger and the want to like be violent or revolutionary, because otherwise that emotion's just too much of the loss. And I think these aren't states we need to be worried about unless they start wrecking our lives, because they're really healthy and adaptive states.
That's another part of the somatic teaching that we're doing today, with this idea of from the inside out, knowing that these things are natural, that they are
Yes.
part of us. Mm-hmm. And when we get quote stuck, and I'm quoting a lot, it's
Yeah.
that's when we're having a dysregulation, and we need a different kind of memory. We need to get some help to remember.
I think that with these states come a lot of emotions. And even if we think of numbness as an emotion, and that as long as the emotions are moving, as long as there's fluidity, like weather patterns, then we're not stuck. And when they stop moving, because I mean, there are different philosophies about how long acute grief or, you know, lasts. I mean, I don't know what to say. I feel like people's processes are their own. But if the emotion is kind of a cloud that you can't get out of, or a thunderstorm that you can't get out of, yeah, that's a problem. But it doesn't mean it's a problem if you're alternating between grief, guilt, and joy, you know, appreciating this person. I think it's all going to be there for as long as it needs to be there. And the things to really look out for are depression versus sadness. Depression doesn't move. I don't think it's an emotion. It's more of like a state. Not letting yourself go through your feelings. So numbing, not because your body chose to numb, but because you're using alcohol or marijuana or food or sex. Or anything like that, or, you know, anger to a point where it's not just that you're going into the woods shouting or, you know, hitting trees with branches, but you're hitting your other kids or you're cutting yourself, or it's the more that when the emotions turn into states that are harmful, that you really do need to seek out some help. But I think fight, flight, and freeze and fawning, and conversely, moving into periods where you're inexplicably grateful. And some people are freaked out by that. Like, someone just died and I feel so rich. I have my heart so full. I feel so grateful. That's all just part of the process. And it all happens in your body.
Yes, that there is a sense of movement. That wave that even you were talking about with the breath happens with the process of grieving. You mentioned something that I want to explore a little bit more. You said freeze, fight, freeze, and fawn. Fawn, what is fawn?
Fawn is when, I think it's the, like in Elizabeth Kubler-Ross terms with grief and loss, it's like the trying to make a bargain. Like, even if it's not rational, it's like, if I'm really good, can we not do this? Or if I'm really good, can we fix it? So it's a stress response, right? Like, especially women will be more likely to have that stress response. Like, someone's awful to us and we think like, oh, well, what can I do if I'm really, really nice and I'm really, really good? It'll go back to how it used to be, or they'll take what they did back. And I think that happens a lot when people die, because it's just like, it's inexplicable to our bodies. I mean, even if our minds are prepared, like someone, you know, is sick and you know they're going to die, but still often the shock to the body of that person not being there, that there-ness, that familiarity of another being, that being gone, is a shock. And so how does the system try to navigate understanding that shock? Even if you know here, oh, well, they're
in our brain
wants to live. Yeah. I mean, yeah. And your brain can help. I mean, I'm not just a body up person. I think, you know, what your cognitions are and how you use them are important too. But I think like, you know, I went to some grief groups after my son died and I was fairly horrified. Because I think obviously feeling camaraderie and connection is valuable. And what I found in the grief groups I attended was there was a lot of rumination about this, the event and the same, you know, it was all thinking about if
in
I
your
had
head.
Done something different or why is God punishing me? It's all this thinking,
Yeah.
And
So
if you think, you don't have to feel.
If you think, you don't have to feel.
It's good to do both.
Well, we need our brains as well.
Yeah.
To think and feel. What would be a way of getting, if you've left your body, what would be another way that we can explore to get into what's happening now? What's happening now? Is that what, you know, is that feeling your body in space, or what would be a way for someone who's not familiar with this?
Yes. I think that I don't think we leave our bodies. We're in our bodies, but we leave our connection to being home in our body. So one thing that we could think of again, and this was something that was true embryologically, is that what starts to form your skin comes from the back. The same material that forms your amniotic fluid forms your skin. And so a little, you know, giving heuristics here, like quick things people can do that. For some people, these are very, very helpful. But just stroking your body from the back to the front, feeling like, almost like you're putting on, you know how in like The Hobbit or something, they would wear those big cloaks, you know, and that your skin is that cloak. And just stroking your skin, and how you stroke your skin, variation. Some people get really annoyed with light touch. Other people will need light touch. But that stroking from back to front, covering your arms, covering your legs, and your skin is this permeable boundary. It's not a rigid boundary, but it is a boundary. It's what this embodied self exists in.
So let's do that just to get that sense of connection. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, I notice you're stroking down, and that's a common thing to help calm the vagal, or I shouldn't say calm the vagal, activate the vagal.
What's
vagal? Nervous system.
What's vagal? What is that?
Vagal is the largest nerve of your parasympathetic nervous system. And for some people, in like the polyvagal theory, it is the pinnacle of nervous system regulation. So it needs to be attended to. So this kind of stroking down can be very nice, that I saw you doing for calming. And you could definitely do that in your arms too. The cranial nerve 11 is kind of a co-helper with the vagal. That has a lot to do with the tension in your shoulders. So you could kind of stroke down that way. And that's calming. For being in your body, I was actually suggesting to go from the back, like the back of your head, around to the front.
To the forehead.
To the forehead, to the face, the back of the neck, to the front of the throat, the back where the spine is, around to the shoulders and the chest. Just like you're really wrapping yourself in yourself. And I remember I had one client who was very, she actually had had a lot of trauma. And this was one of the first things that really helped her. She got a big shawl. And whenever she was feeling really vulnerable in a meeting, she was a person who, you know, worked in the world and had to go to a lot of meetings. She would kind of wrap herself in her shawl. And that helped her to feel this containment of the skin coming from the back to the front.
Oh, beautiful connection. That's lovely. By the way, if you have just tuned in, you're listening to Healthy Options on WERU Community Radio. I'm Rhonda Feynman. Our guest today is Donna Brooks. She has 40 years of experience teaching, counseling, and coaching as a somatic movement therapist, yoga therapist, and educator. And we are talking about ways to feel, experience the inside out in our connections. I love that sense. So we're moving in from the back to the front. I love that. And, you know, and in Chinese medicine, we talk about colds and certain illnesses coming in through the points in the back of your neck. So I think that sense of experiencing the world from the back to the front is in many, many systems, many ways of experiencing that. When you're doing that, you're also aware, when you're wrapping and you're aware of where you are in space and time, should I say? What else would you do to create that connection?
Aware of yourself in space. That's interesting. Yes. I think that kind of means, I'm getting kind of esoteric here. How are we defining space? Because there's a pervading space, you know, that's very, very subtle, but pervades us. And then there's the space that it's almost like when we were in the womb, to go back to the womb, you know, you were in this fluid, rich environment. You had this constant feedback. And in a way, if you tune in, the atmosphere has that quality too. So once you're wrapped and you start moving from your wrap, it's not just you in nothing. It's you, and just think that there's humidity in the atmosphere. So there's a kind of countering to your movement, a kind of holding as you go through space. And that's a sort of, it's built up upon gravity and then coming out of gravity up into whatever the counter gravity is called. I know there's a physics term, but I don't recall it. And as you do that, you're not alone. You know, you still have these forces that are giving feedback to your body so you can interact. Your proprioception, your sense of self in space isn't alone in you. You're still held.
I love that. This is not a TV program, so you can't see us all dancing and expressing ourselves. It's like contact improv, right, happening right here on Healthy Options.
That's some of these principles are very deep to contact improv. Absolutely.
Yes, the sense that we are in something. It's not emptiness in some ways. And then, of course, there's the connection. There's a meditation where it's all emptiness. So find what resonates and where you can enter, right?
Yeah, I like that, Rhonda.
Yeah. One of the things we do also in trauma and in grief is to get that sense of if you're lying down in sand or where are we touching, right? Would you noticing the colors around you, the breath? What else would you do for someone to help work with that?
I think that one of the things that's really often lost in our culture, it's interesting you just mentioned contact improvisation, because one of the most beautiful things about contact improvisation is just the no pressure meeting. There's this word yield, like two people yielding into each other. So that doesn't mean one person's carrying the other person. It doesn't mean that one person's like pulling away and the other person's trying to grab them. Just this meeting. And so one of the things that is so healing with any kind of loss, we say touch, but it's not just touch. It's can you feel that same kind of quality of gravity now with another person? So, and people can feel this emotionally too. I mean, that's a part of it. And it's very nice to feel another body that way, that you can rest into when you have that sense of grief and loss. And they're not, they don't need to work, you know, they don't need to, I mean, sometimes, yeah, they may want to, they may want to give you a massage or, you know, squeeze you extra hard, but just that quality, kind of like when you would watch a baby just resting on their parent's chest. It's just like this shared sense of breath, easy breath. And that, I say, is so huge with grief and loss, and it can be so difficult to find in our society, but so necessary.
The breath again.
And with someone else, or even with an animal, you know, I know I'm very familiar with the fact that many of us in our culture live by ourselves. And I've had many clients who use their cats, especially people who are cat people, to just put the cat on their chest or on their belly or sit with the cat on their lap and just feel the mutuality of the warmth and the, it's not even a conscious breath, because, you know, breath can be conscious or unconscious. So just that gentle, nowhere to go, nothing to do with the breath, but yet sharing it with this other person or this animal is very, very profoundly healing.
We're just sitting with that for a moment. A lot of quiet and, a lot of quiet with our animals. And if you don't have an animal, I think that what we just learned with this that massage, the skin massage of stroking, is another way of bringing that connection.
I know down here, I mean, I think it's a very trusting person who would offer this service, but I notice people are putting up flyers for, they will just come over, and obviously you pay them, but they will come over and just hold you.
Wow.
Like they'll just cuddle you.
Wow.
I think it's one of, I mean, I understand why therapists aren't supposed to hold their clients, but it's also a loss because, you know, you can feel the difference just in your hands. Maybe this is a nice ending practice because I think we're near the end.
We have a couple of minutes, yes.
It's just, if you have a partner, you can do this with a partner. And you probably, I know this is a martial arts exercise too, but for our purposes right now, just kind of feeling your hands against each other. Or if you have a nice big gym ball, you could put your hand against a gym ball and feel the difference between not really resting into your other hand or not really resting into the ball versus pushing. Right. So when we do yoga, we're often pushing our hands together. And so somewhere in this continuum between pushing the hands together and sort of not fully yielding into the fat, it's actually the fat of the tissue or the softness of the ball. When you yield into the fat of the tissue, just ask yourself if you feel more at home, if you've come home. And if you're not sure, compare that to a press or kind of not a light, just resting without, you know what I mean by the fat? We all have these pads on our hands where there's fat. Mm-hmm. And so that's very juicy and soft and comforting. Yeah, you can rub your hands too to help warm them up. And then just feel the yield. And that's what we're looking for with gravity. A lot with life. And if you do have a partner or a friend or a grandchild or a pet, where is that yield? And if you rest into that yield, how does that transform your sense of being in and your sense of self?
And again, the softening of the breath can happen when you're doing that. And the breath is can be a reflection of that nervous system. So really coming right into ourselves. Yeah. So, wow. lots to explore here. Wow. Yes. So I think we have come to the end of this, and I know we could continue. And there's so much more. And thank you so much. Our guest today has been Donna Brooks, certified yoga therapist and master somatic movement therapist and educator. Donna's website is originalbodywisdom.com, originalbodywisdom.com, and you can explore more of the things in depth that we explored here. And you can find a link there to her somatic movement therapy for trauma, grief, and loss. This show and information that was mentioned will be posted on Healthy Options on the archives in the public affairs section at weru.org. You can also get the WERU app and listen there as a podcast, so don't forget to do that. Thanks to Joel Mann and Amy Brown of WERU for engineering support, and always to our co-producer, Petra Hall. And as always, we want to thank all of our WERU listeners and supporters. This is Rhonda Fineman wishing you the best in health.